relationship with Krishna, and it has to be revived. But revival is not a mental revival. It is to be experienced through other two faculties, like mind, words and actions. So, mental revival is not very important, that people think that, oh, I'm initiated, I'm done. No. And that is the biggest obstacle. So, we insist upon the words and action also to be revived. So our fulfillment will be in total experience of this transcendental fact. We have to have very confirmed faith in that. And therefore a rigorous training, a gradual training, the rigorous training is required. We must make sure that anartha nivritti is a very important stumbling block to be considered, that if that is possible in association and remaining in discipline, it will be eradicated. It's guaranteed. So, such factual experiences of purification will be also revealed. And person can estimate his own progress, right? Others can also. So, if Melbourne Temple is anticipating certain standard behavior, it is no wonder that we have to comply to it. Anyway, thinking of this anartha nivritti, we understand that not knowing the significance of the holy name means the ignorance aspect induces anarthas to proliferate. If we remain ignorant of our own reality, which is being brought out by chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. The holy name is purifying and itself is removing the ignorance. But still, our association with the matter makes it polluted over and over again. So in our marginal state, we have to make a disciplined resolve. We need some external help, like rules and regulations to be imposed, and one has to take voluntarily. Then one has to associate in order to get strength. Holy name is powerful, association is powerful, rules and regulations are guaranteeing powerfulness, you know, to help us advance. So we have to utilize all these faculties very carefully and never be neglectful of it. So we will soon be eradicated out of all the anarthas, unwanted thing in our life. That is a guaranteed thing. So keep up that spirit. Otherwise, anarthas will lead into aparadhas. When anarthas are continued, aparadhas are enjoying. Anarthas, ignorance, these are all, and aparadhas, these are three major factors that are stumbling blocks in our progressive aspect of devotional service. Haridas Thakur, you know, having complete faith on the holy name, has revealed this fact. It's by his own experience. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made him talk. You know, because he is an acharya, he must teach. So he is taking care of each and every minute details. So this has been very well described in Harinam Chintamani. And he is advising that the Nama Prabhu is the manifested Lord Shri Krishna in the age of Kali. Kali Kalera Nama Rupe Krishna Ravatar. There is nothing available than this holy name manifest to help us. Even though Kali is very disqualification in the first place, and our incapacity in so many ways, our inability in so many ways are like icing on the cake of disqualifications. Yet the holy name, by the mercy of the Lord Himself, has been the means to rescue us from the ocean of birth and death. So we must accept Him, worship Him, the holy name, Nama Prabhu, with the utmost care and caution. So the cautions are that never allow our ignorance to interfere. Means we have to make a resolve and accept it. If we have doubt, then doubt can be revealed by proper inquiries and mitigated. If we have some practical difficulty, it can be adjusted with the guidance of Guru. Right? But still, if we insist that we are not qualified to chant, then there is nothing more misfortunate situation for him. Even though the holy name is so easily available, people have so many other in their sense, important inabilities to make an excuse not to chant Hare Krishna. But somehow or another, you are fortunate. You are all chanting. And therefore, we do not go into their miseries. Rather, we should rejoice that now it is coming to a very firm resolve to make Nam Prabhu our the aim and objective of our life. So, we should not remain much ignorant, rather always chant with enthusiasm. Utsaha nishchayat dhairyat, with firm determination and patience, that Nam Prabhu will reveal His own nature if I am able to please Him. So my target is to serve in such a way that the Nam Prabhu may become merciful on us. Right? So with that firm resolve, you are going to take vow today that you will chant 16 rounds and for external purification that gives guaranteed liberation is the four regulative principles that you will promise to follow very sternly. General description of the aparadhas are reiterated in giving the like caution or warning towards our desire to progress, because even though if one is habituated to recite daily, but when they are recited daily, recitation does not expose the grim picture if at all we become subject to commit unknowingly even. So knowingly or unknowingly, these two phases have to be kept in mind. Attentive chanting will not allow unknowing offenses. It is emphasized to chant attentively because you will be knowledgeable about the repercussions. Otherwise, daily recitation of 10 offenses will not much make you aware the details of the grim consequences. But Haridas Thakur explains both the remedy in case knowingly or unknowingly we commit offenses. We have to take as an immediate step to nullify the offense. Never mind, sometimes we find that begging forgiveness becomes habitual, so they can keep on repeating the offenses. Sometimes, you know, people do. Recently I have a conversation and communication by email to one of the aspiring students in New Zealand. She is worried about the mental offenses she has committed all the time. Mental offenses. Devotees say, yes, mental offenses are going to disturb you. So at the mental level you must clear off. But it's better to express your feeling of committing an offense. You better take help of the one who you offended mentally. But is it required? A gross physical offense to a devotee needs an immediate remedy by begging forgiveness. But mentally, a person may think mentally of, and mental offense is going to disturb the person who commits, not the person who is being offended. So why there is any necessity to go and show that I was mentally offending you? Means you want to remain mental? It is not appropriate. But one who hears that even mentally committing offense is an offense. But you can't go and beg to a third party whom you do not have any kind of interaction, but yet you have offended mentally. Otherwise, they will consider you are a mental case anyway. You can't go on begging forgiveness of the offenses mentally, and you will be surprised. Oh my God, what is this? No, there is no necessity. But mental offense have to be mitigated with resolve to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's not an offense of a devotee, open physical offense or anything. It's not like that. Sometimes the thoughts come, but thoughts can be curbed. But the actions once are done, it cannot be undone. Therefore, there is a necessity to beg forgiveness of a physical gross offense committed at the lotus feet of a devotee. In neophyte state, unknowing offenses. Mental offense is an unknowingly committing. It comes in that category. Because it's going to disturb him, his devotional service, person's devotional service. He will be always, she will be always mentally hovering as if possessed. A self-created fear. But the holy name makes us fearless. So therefore we need to look into this particular situation that to offend a devotee, to blaspheme a devotee who has dedicated his life in propagating the holy name of the Lord, that should be totally avoided. And if by chance unknowingly also it is being committed, then go and beg forgiveness. That is important. In case, sometimes in the presence of the devotee, our likes and dislikes come in front, and dislike creates a kind of mental criticism in the mind of an offender. Rather, he had to spit at the thought instead of go and beg forgiveness. The example is that Yamunacharya was thinking, the great, then when a thought springs out in the mind, for an association with woman for sense enjoyment, I immediately spit at the thought. That an offensive mentality disturbs the person, but the person is determined to spit it out. Doesn't have to look for another physical remedy for it, for a mental. So, that is the resolve within one's own mind, one's own heart, one's own intimate relationship with the Lord. Just beg to the Lord, I'm sorry, I had this kind of thought. But you don't have to go, because that person is not disturbed by your thoughts. If your thoughts are very powerful, like a tantric, and it can be controlling somebody else's mind, then it's a different thing, you know. But ordinarily, we do not go into that kind of offense. So in this way, we should understand that knowingly or unknowingly committing, we must beg forgiveness to the offender in physical way, but mentally to Krishna, and remain peaceful. Without begging forgiveness, there is no salvation. But physically, if a devotee is offended, the devotee of nature of Vaishnava, very compassionate, he will forgive. That is 100%. Suppose if that devotee does not forgive, then he is also going to become implicated. Is going to be implicated. So, but it is not an easy way. Oh, I did an offense knowingly because it is required, politically correct. But then we will beg the forgiveness. So knowingly commit, there will be such a deposit in the back of our mind, it will be deposited, that I did this specific offense in order to do something as a service to Krishna. It was required. I have to treat my god brother like that. It's a politically correct situation. But you should not forget that. When opportune time comes, beg the forgiveness. Srila Prabhupada showed this example. Knowingly or unknowingly committing offense to the lotus feet of Vaishnava, he remembered. He said, I might have offended many of my god brothers. I beg my forgiveness. Please tell them to bless me. Now I am going to leave the body, but before leaving the body, he must mentally asking forgiveness to the Lord, the general public even. We do not know whom specifically he has offended, but such thoughts do come. So, Srila Prabhupada shows that example. Otherwise, what is the necessity for a pure devotee to ask? He is already pure, he is not, and he is so successful that way that nobody can even take it for granted that Prabhupada might have offended anybody. So, sometimes there are certain instructions even Srila Prabhupada gives to the devotee that might be, you know, how is it that he can tell like that? It's offensive, this, that. But no, to promote the cause of Krishna consciousness, to take a very decisive action, it may hurt somebody who is very attached bodily, maybe a Vaishnava. But Prabhupada would remain alert. Therefore, before leaving his body, he begged forgiveness. I don't want to leave any burden of my offenses on this planet Earth. Vaishnava is very, very compassionate. He does not want to be subject of either any pollution, any kind of imperfect situations. Rather, by showing his ideal example, he will show that I want to go offenseless. So whatever offenses, please forgive. This is the climax of developing an offenseless state. Prabhupada said that sometimes the great acharyas also disagree with each other. Great acharyas disagree with each other. Just like Vallabhacharya and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had disagreement. Right? But this disagreement doesn't become stumbling block in our devotional service. If we have Krishna in center, if it is for the sake of Krishna consciousness, Vallabhacharya was following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu up to that point. But later on he chose to become Acharya of Vishnu Swami Sampradaya, the Rudra Sampradaya. There was an attempt to mitigate this difference by Gadadhar Pandit. He intervened. even at the displeasure of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Gadadhar Pandit, who gave shelter to Vallabhacharya. And Vallabhacharya was insisting to that he wants an endorsement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for his Subodhini treatise on Srimad Bhagavatam, which he was very proud, and he was declaring boldly that it is better than Sridhar Swami's. And I have nullified his argument, this and that. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, this is an offensive mentality. Offensive mentality. Right? So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu curbed him. Right there. And disciplic succession predecessors Acharya are our life and soul. We cannot transgress the etiquette. So, Vallabhacharya got stunned. But nonetheless, he was also a pure devotee. He did not accept wholeheartedly Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's suggestions. But he took shelter of Gadadhar Pandit. And Gadadhar Pandit, with Radharani's bow, is more compassionate. You know, a devotee has, in that sense, disagreement on philosophical points. Prabhupada was of same spirit. You remember the incident when the devotees published this disagreement article in Back to Godhead magazine without knowledge of Prabhupada in the early times, before 77, in Back to Godhead magazine. And it created disturbance in Vallabha Sampradaya. It created disturbance. They took it as an offense. And Prabhupada was trying to pacify them. Prabhupada chastised the devotees that you should not publish without my knowledge. Well, you should have shown me what are you publishing. So, but they took as an offense, and Prabhupada tried to pacify them by, you know, becoming more gentle and explain. And Prabhupada said, the great acharyas, they have disagreement in their circle, but what do we have? We do not have any disagreement. So please come. You know, let's preach together. You are also bona fide. You know. Prabhupada invited the Tilakayats, the head acharyas of Nathadwar, when Krishna Balaram temple was inaugurated. They chose not to come because Prabhupada's arguments are solid. They didn't want to confront. But the facts remain the same. So, in that case, we see our attitude should be of so much friendship, love and care. And philosophical disagreements one may take that, they are telling this, they are telling that. So similarly, we have to learn something of in our preaching when we try to preach the devotees who are inclined to worship demigods. And because Krishna tells that the worshipper of demigods are less intelligent, but that will hurt the people socially because they do not know. But when we start glorifying the demigods as devotees, then they think that their position of worshipping them is all right. But then we interject that because they do not worship for devotional service. They may think, so we make a distinction that having a karmagand or worshipping the demigod for some fruitive result is done by less intelligent people. But the demigods are not less intelligent. We glorify them. So then we make separation between them and the demigods. It's not that they are so much intimately committed for Ganesh or this or that. So, otherwise they take an offense. And you will not be able to preach them at all if they take offense. So, how to go by? And Prabhupada showed the technique. There is a proverb in Gujarati that don't call blind a blind straight. But you tell him, hey Prabhu, how is it that you lost your vision? How is it that you lost your vision? But then, within the circle of devotee, Prabhupada gave an example. Oh, look at that. What a material attachment, material understanding they have. Even though he is blind by birth, but the mother gave the name Kamalalochan. So, the point of difference in the presentation of our spiritual aspect for their material aspect. So, it is not equal. A devotee is always careful that keeping Krishna in center, he judges the situation and will take a decision, even though if it is apparently offensive, but you know, he will beg forgiveness if it is causing some discomfort. For sake of Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada used that very witful but complete awareness was there. So knowingly committing offense is also an offense, but people without knowledge, when they commit offense, that is unknowing. And both are suggested that they have to beg the forgiveness because it's gross in nature. But for mental offense, you have to resolve within your own heart or super soul or the deity. Please terminate and do not churn too much mentally. Or what will happen if I do not go there or not there? No. It is a mental case. Right? We have to be very careful. So, because offense by nature is a stumbling block in the path of devotional service, and we must carefully take care. Forgiveness is needed, but from whom? If it is a gross offense, then the offender is approached for forgiveness. The offended is approached for forgiveness by the offender. But in mental case, it is not necessary. Only the super soul. The other offenses, according to Haridas Thakur, like to consider the names of Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva to be independent or equal to the holy name of Lord Vishnu. Starting from that, all other offenses can be mitigated by the holy name. It is so powerful. But holy name does take offense on its own head, even though it is in connection with blasphemy of Vedic literature, interpreting, imagining, anything about it. It's an offense on the holy name. there these offenses seem to be indirect. They are indirect. People do not know the glories of the holy name which is described in the Vedic literature. The ultimate aim is to glorify me. Yesterday in the Bhagavatam class, we said, Krishna says that the aim of the Vedas is to glorify me. And you cannot glorify without the holy name. And holy names are according to the qualitativeness of the Lord. The names are qualitative. So if you describe the Lord's transcendental qualities, they are embedded in the holy name. So if you blaspheme the Vedic literature, which is having the aim of glorifying the Supreme Personality of God, the holy name is directly affected. That's why it is said. To disobey the orders of spiritual master is also coming in the same category. The spiritual master tells you, chant 16 rounds a day, you promise, and you do not, then it becomes an offensive situation. It is on the holy name. You go to spiritual master, Guru Maharaj, I could not finish my rounds yesterday. Can you please forgive me? It's not Guru's business. It is the holy name's business. Holy name is supposed to be offended, not Guru. But anyway, Guru is imparting the holy name. So he will say, please cover it up. Make extra effort to whatever the leftover chanting is there. Make it like that. The sixth offense is to consider chanting of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra to be one of the auspicious ritualistic activities offered in the Vedas as Karma Kand. There is some serious situation. It is mostly ignorance. Karmakandis think that, oh, we are also worshipping the Supreme. But that worship is not reaching because it is oriented towards the fruitive result. It doesn't go to Krishna. It goes into Krishna's mechanism to award the fruits. It does not reach. What reaches to Krishna is nothing but devotional service. So karma kand cannot be equated with a devotional service. Karma kand is not devotional service. Can you imagine the demons also perform karma kand and big yagyas? The aim is completely different. The tamasic people do tantra and invoke demigods for fruitive result, whether bad or good. They don't care. But such efforts of belief system for material gain is not reaching at all to Krishna. So therefore, to consider chanting of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, which is devotional service itself to the holy name, cannot be equated with karma kanda. It's an offense on the holy name. One who performs karma kanda and then chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, forget it. It is incongruent situation. It cannot work. Rather, such karma kanda becomes obstacle in the devotional progress. That is fact. Seventh offense is to commit sinful activities on the strength of the holy name of the Lord. That offense is almost identical with the tenth offense, is to have material attachment, even after understanding so many instructions about the holy name. In the sense that committing a willful act comprising of ignorance only. Holy name is awakening from our ignorant state. And our sinful activity on the strength of the holy name is nullifying the effect of awakening. A person will never get up and rise above the platform of the modes. Sinful activities are activities of mode of ignorance. Therefore, holy name is offended when one is simultaneously chanting Hare Krishna and committing sinful activity. Holy name is offended. Just like Lord Shiva is offended by his own devotees when they ask for fruitive results from him. Because such asking makes him disturbed in his own devotional service. Suppose if you are performing devotional service and I am coming and disturbing you, am I not offending you? It is an offense. So how come the worshipper of demigods offend the demigods by asking material benefits? They may be so-called pious activity, but they are not fructifying into going back home, back to Godhead. They can thus only lead you to Swargaloka, where some sinful actions and reactions are still going on. Demigods are punished. Indra can do nonsensical activities even sometimes. But that is a different realm of material management. And they may be exempted even after committing offenses and enough punishment is rewarded, they are set back into the same position. Indra has been several times punished, but re-established in his position. Right? And sometimes he becomes so much devotionally inclined, but nonetheless he is in marginal position. It is tough for Indra to go back home, back to Godhead. He will prefer to come back in the human form of life, be born in the devotee family, and expedite his way on back home, back to Godhead. That is possible. So, we should not knowingly commit sinful activities. Refrain from not following the regulative principles. We have to follow strictly. Ninth offense is to instruct the faithless person about the glories of the holy name. It is simply a waste of time. If you throw the seeds on a stony surface and put on water, it's a waste of that seed because it's not going to grow. So, we have to save our energy, which is given by Krishna, to spread his holy name. Otherwise, if we waste because we think, oh, it is free anyway, I will tell anybody and everybody to chant Hare Krishna, but as soon as you find that guy is an atheist, withdraw from there. You can go ahead, take the risk. And sometimes devotees get repercussions from, you know, approaching this so-called atheist or envious people. That risk has to be taken. But Krishna doesn't want us to take that risk. Rather, you know, we save by safeguards. The tenth offense is that even after understanding the efficacy of the holy name, if we do not develop detachment from materialistic activities, then we are taxing the holy name. We are taxing the holy name. And it's an offense. Because, again, it's just like saucha kunjaravat, an elephant taking bath, and very clear water. He thinks he's purified, but his habit is to come out on the land and then smear the dust on his body. So, whatever he has been cleansed again became dirty. So his own efforts are being nullified. His own efforts for purifying are nullified by such actions. Attachments are the ultimate tightropes to bind us in the material life. The ultimate. And these attachment knots are within the core of our heart. Holy name, if taken as the remedy, it will definitely slash us the knots in the heart. But however, it has to be taken in exact directive of Bhagavad Dharma, that we must cultivate mode of goodness to execute devotional service. So we will be able to have a pleasant atmosphere. And if we continue, then the transcendental nature of the Lord will be revealed, by which we will become liberated. Simply knowing the transcendental nature, we will become liberated. And in that liberated state, well protected with our process of chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, it will show the mercy to knock out all the doubts, slashes all the knots of misconception, and even while performing all the activities, will not yield a binding result. In that situation, we'll see face to face the Lord and ourselves. The Lord as the master, and we are as the servant. That is our eternal swarupa. So the holy name is powerful to polish the dirty gem of contaminated material energies. The soul will become a very sparkling, pure diamond. And he will see face to face. Drashta evatmanishvare. He will see the super soul as his master, face to face. So, that is a guaranteed success. And I pray today that you succeed in your life's mission, becoming Krishna conscious and lead others. So, we start calling in the order they are sitting, so it will not be a chaos, not crossing each other. Okay. Shil Prabhu. Shil Prabhu is a prodigy son of Asitaradya Prabhu. Shyama Mataji. He has been very introspective. So, Shil Prabhu, you are the abode of all good qualities. And they are opulent qualities. And they are called Shri. Right? But before I go further, tell me, you promise to chant minimum 16 rounds of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra daily without fail? You promise to follow four regulative principles in front of the deities, devotees, and now fire sacrifice is going to be lit. And what are they? Good. You are a big man now. And you have to carry on these qualities. Opulent qualities. So always remain the abode of all opulent qualities of the Lord. Therefore I give you the name Sri Niketan Das. Jai Sri Niketan Prabhu ki. Let's have Abhishek. On you, Abhishek. Let's have an Abhishek. Not mango shake. Right? I'm diabetic. If I give another shake, then it will hurt me. Where is the sleep? My glasses. That's all right. Oh. Abhishek Prabhu is having very good qualities of a devotee. His intelligence is very steadfast. Unbewavering intelligence. You know, intelligence is a discriminating faculty between sat and asat. He is always thinking of sat. By service attitude, he never failed. Since he took shelter, is always remaining pure in condition. So, give me all the promises. You will chant 16 rounds of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra diligently, attentively, and cautiously. Okay? And you also promised to follow four regulative principles to the best of your ability and fructifying into an ideal Vaishnava. Good. Okay. Please keep this intelligence steadfast. Right? Therefore, I am giving him the name Akhandadhi Das. Akhandadhi. Di means Diya, Buddhi. Akhanda. Uninterrupted, unmotivated, unbroken. Because he has to represent the unbroken chain of disciplic succession too. Akhanda Dhi Prabhu Ki Jai. Please tell your parents, call me Akhanda Dhi. Oh, Dhanasekhar Prabhu, you will be called Dhanasekhar only up to this day and this time only, till I give you the name. And you will be rid of all your despondencies. Okay? He told me, Maharaj, this name is haunting me. the name is not my qualification even. I am at odds with Dhan. And yet they call me Dhanasekhar. I said, don't worry, don't become despondent. So he was requesting that, Maharaj, you give me such a name that I will tell all of my relatives never to call me Dhanasekhar. Okay, thank you. I thought he was going to give class. Jai. So, let's cut short. Will you chant 16 rounds very carefully, daily, without fail? Okay. And four regulative principles, what are those? Okay. Any other fifth principle? All right. I hope you like this name. Don't complain. You have to take the name. At least, Dhanasekhar was not indicating something of Krishna, he said to me. I said, Krishna is the reservoir of all dhan. He has heaps of dhan. The Shekhar means a heap, and the peak, the topmost. But anyway, what can you do? Anyway, that name has no meaning to him. And we also understand that we are not simply sitting on the heap of opulence. Our opulence is being devotee. Vaishnava opulence is the Vaishnava Kantaha is the 26 qualities of the devotee. That is the opulence. So anyway, let's forget Dhanasekhar. For once and all. Good. I should give him. I want to bind you. Fix with Krishna's holy name. Therefore, I'm giving Damodar Das. Damodar. You are captured. Jai Padmavati Mataji. Jai. In the ideal household life, both Tanshika Prabhu and Padmavati Mataji, they remain completely aloof, even though so many problems are there in raising the kids, fulfilling all the obligations to the family. They are coming from Tirupati Balaji. Right? Or not ordinary people anyway. But from the Venkatachal they are coming to Vrindavan. Right? So, we see so much intensify nature. The name Padma or Padmavati is Lakshmi herself, right? Why should I change the name? But I want to. I may not change the meaning, right? But let's talk later on. Mataji, you will promise to chant 16 rounds daily without fail. What are the four regulative principles? There are two people or two personalities born out of lotus. Do you know who? Lord Brahma. Brahma is called Padmasambho. Alright? But this is Mataji. We can't offer Brahma's name. Right? But who is the other personality also born out of lotus? Yeah. So therefore we can call her Padma Sambhava Devi Dasi. Sambhava. That's a feminine. Thank you very much. Kirtan? Kirtan. It means Kopri.